The Veritas Radio Network is guaranteed the right to offend, annoy, agitate, shout heresy, and entertain.
You should start programming right now.
Kind of like the cultural sewage served up on Bravo or CMT, only it's on 24 hours a day, except Sundays. When the truth gets you angry and you throw your smartphone, remember, no one is forcing you to listen to the truth on the Veritas Radio Network.
You can't handle the truth.
You're doing that of your own free will. That's what makes this country great and any gay marriage pointless.
That's offensive.
So there isn't much you can do about it, Chowderhead.
I'm trying to think, but nothing happens.
Grab a book, take a vow, and conform your mind to reality. Otherwise, you're just another Judas-inspired Karl Marx wannabe.
And your children will steal your credit card number to buy tickets to the Miley Cyrus Twerker's Ball.
I came in like a wrecking ball.
Are you ready? Let's get it on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
Welcome to this episode, number 18 of the Constitution Hour, featuring Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman. I'm your host, Mike Church. We are live. As always, here on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network. If you missed any of the previous 17 episodes, you can always download them for 99 cents if you're not a member at veritasradionetwork.com. If you are a member, don't cost nothing. So find all 17 of those episodes plus 300 plus episodes of our other seven original shows. Quality radio programming, radio the way it should be that you cannot get anywhere else. And our radio station is live and streaming 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at VeritasRadioNetwork.com. You can get us on the Veritas Radio Network app for the Windows phone, for the Google Android phone, or the Android phone through the Google Store, or the iPhone or the iPad in the iTunes Store. Let's go to our host, the real star of the show, Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman, and today's subject is the controversy, or the controversy that was just will not die. It just won't go away. It keeps rearing its ugly head. And surprisingly, no, I'm not talking about the ineligibility of Edward Rafael Cruz for the presidency. I refer, of course, to the issue of banking and the specter, and it truly is a specter, of once President Andrew Jackson and his now still much ballyhooed but soon-to-end appearance on a $20 bill. So, Kevin, I bet you haven't seen this, because this is today's Washington Post. Some cat wrote a letter to the editor of the Washington Post, the real reason to kick Jackson off the $20 bill. I think you're going to like this. I'll share just a paragraph of it with you. How are you, old friend?
Well, Mike, how are you?
I am well. I trust the automobile is in tip-top shape now?
Yeah, well, only took a couple of grand out of my checking account, but yeah.
You have to love all these modern appliances and stuff that they say that we have to have in order to exist in a modern world. But when they break down, boy, howdy, do they break down.
You know, actually, I get a semi-annual email from a famous retailer telling me that I ought to have my appliances all checked up on. And so last time around, I actually did ask for them to send guys out here to take a look at my washer and dryer, my refrigerator, freezer, and my oven stove. And there were three different, besides my dishwasher. So there were three different technicians to come look at separate times at my four appliances. And each of them told me separately, two of them without my asking, that I should definitely not replace my appliances. I said I was thinking about doing so. They are all 20 years old or more, and they all three of these guys told me, well, if you buy new appliances now, they'll generally last you 5 or 6 years. But if you keep the ones you have, they could last you for the rest of your life. You'll just occasionally have to get some kind of a new belt or something, but there's no reason why they would ever be defunct. On the other hand, new ones are just made to go obsolescent, so they have all kinds of fancy, shiny plastic and so on the new washers and dryers and freezers, refrigerators, and so on, but apparently they're not worth having. I thought it was kind of funny that the retailer, which clearly had in mind having me be persuaded to buy new appliances when it sent these people out to my house to look at the old ones, was actually having its potential for sales undercut by these people.
This is what is known, Kevin, as forced obsolescence.
Well, right, yes. I remember actually when I was in high school, I graduated from Belton, Texas High School in 1981. I took, in my freshman year and my senior year, I took Biology 1 and Biology 2 with an old lady named Miss Hitt, H-I-T-T. And Miss Hitt had one of her favorite rants, and she would go into long rants. She was, I think, about 10 years past the age at which she ought to have retired from being a teacher. And so she didn't realize she was telling these stories over and over. But one of her favorite rants was about the fact that in the 1960s, some guy who worked at one of the corporations that made ladies' stockings had told her that, well, of course, they knew how to make ladies' stockings that didn't run, but they didn't make them because then they wouldn't have any market for ladies' stockings anymore. Every woman in America would buy 5 pairs, and that would be the end of it. So I think this is more or less the story of contemporary capitalism. People like their shiny new refrigerators, but but they don't realize that they're going to be buying new ones in 6 years.
We're going to talk about the Constitution in a minute, but I was just going to say, you're Eastern Orthodox, I'm Catholic, we're kissing cousins. We're both churches, though, still somewhere in the archives have the banishment against this practice of what's called usury. That sounds like usury to me. Oh, yeah, we can make it so it doesn't break, but we're not going to make it so it doesn't break because you guys had to buy new ones from us. So,
pretty, it's not quite a scam, but I don't know how else to describe it. It's just, it's lamentable because, you know, there are many landfills full of old appliances and stockings with runs in them and so on that people really wouldn't have had to replace if they hadn't intentionally been made to wear out so that we'd have to buy new ones.
Here's the insult to the injury. It's the women, the angry, ugly women, members of Gal Qaeda that didn't want to wear the stockings to begin with, but were out of habit and out of tradition, continue to wear them, and now find out that they were bedeviled by men making decisions that stockings would run. And that's why the landfills are filled with those stockings. So the real reason to kick Andrew Jackson off the $20 bill, I read it and I'm thinking this has Kevin Gutzman written all over it. This will be a great launching pad for you to take and run with.
May I guess?
Go ahead.
Is not sensitive to the transgendered.
Well, unless Hamilton was transgendered, no, that's not it. And Hamilton may have been, for all we know. In criticizing the decision to remove Andrew Jackson from the $20 bill, former Virginia Senator Jim Webb's April 25th op-ed, Respect Tubman and Jackson, missed the best reason for demoting demonetizing Jackson. Jackson vetoed the recharter of the Second Bank of the United States, a move, Mr. Webb said, that prevented the triumph of the aristocracy. Instituted under Hamilton, blah, 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 blah. 5 years later, realizing that a national bank was necessary for a smoothly functioning economy, Madison chartered the Second Bank of the United States. Ignoring the wisdom of this chastened bank opponent, Jackson removed federal deposits from the bank and then vetoed its recharter. That prompted a credit contraction that contributed to the 1837 Depression, which hit the middle class much harder than the aristocracy. As for the aristocracy, Jackson's 1828 election replaced the aristocracy with a populist government of the people. Jackson's bank veto didn't prevent the spread of the aristocracy. It kicked the aristocracy when it was down. Jackson shouldn't be on any federal coins or paper currency, components of a monetary system he deplored and tried to kill. Signed, James A. Duholm, Washington, D.C. That's a lot to digest. Sounds to me like Mr. Duholm is at least partly correct, though. What do you think?
Well, I don't agree with him concerning the reasons for the contraction of 1837. That was based on other economic moves Jackson took, and of course was ultimately a predictable outcome of the fact that the banking system had been inflating the money supply for years, and ultimately, you know, as Austrian business cycle theory tells us, this leads to crashes. There's no way to avoid it. But I think in general it's true that probably General Jackson wouldn't want to be on a federally issued bank note, on a Federal Reserve note, any more than Thomas Jefferson would want to have a federally funded monument in Washington, D.C., or James Madison would think we should have a federally funded Constitution Day every year. I think these are all unconstitutional by a Jeffersonian reading of the Constitution. I, however, have other reasons for thinking, and I've long told people, that Andrew Jackson shouldn't be on the currency. So I have to give Secretary Liu, I guess, two cheers. I think his, his motives are bad, but his action was accidentally the correct one. So so I will celebrate his unknowingly lurching into a correct act.
844-527-8723 is our telephone number if you'd like to be a part of the Constitution Hour. You can always send your questions. Just use the contact form at VeritasRadioNetwork.com. And if you're a Founders Pass member, if you click on My Account and then scroll down to My Account page, you will then be taken to the account level that you logged in under. And if you're yearly or better, well, then you have a pull-down menu of email addresses that you can use to send personal notes to anyone who is part of the Crusade Channel or the Veritas Radio Network, and Kevin's is in that number. So if you want to send a note, that's there are two ways to do it right there. Okay, so back to the subject here. Lou, that's Jack Lou, wants to replace or floated the idea that perhaps Jackson could be replaced on the 20 with Harriet Tubman. She, a member of that august generation of African-Americans or Black Americans, whichever term you wish to use, that survived the end, or survived Lincoln's War, and then survived the end of the peculiar institution, as it was known, of slavery. And then by all accounts, Kevin, she remained seemingly, or apparently, very active. And there's a pretty good a history trail or paper trail that Miss Tubman left that said that I don't think that Miss Tubman is the kind of person that a Barack Obama or a Hillary Clinton would want to put on a $20 bill.
Well, you know, it's all about celebrating certain races, classes, and genders, quote-unquote. There are several lamentable things about what Lou has done. First, the question comes up, well, whose decision should it be what's on the American currency, and what kind of images in general do we want on American currency? You know, in George Washington's lifetime, people had the idea of putting him on the money. And he said he didn't want to be on the money. He thought it was monarchical to have him on the money. And in fact, it was not common American practice to have living people on the money. I think there's a good argument that we shouldn't have any living people on the money, or actually any deceased people. Why not abstractions, or why not monuments or works of art and so on? That's one issue. Another issue is, again, why is it up to Secretary Liu to make this decision? Isn't that what we have a Congress for? I remember in 1994, the Republican Party won control of the House of Representatives for the first time in 40 years. At that point, I was just finishing my master's degree in American history at the University of Virginia, and I wrote a letter to the incoming Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, proposing that he should see to the civil calendar of the United States. I thought that our national holidays didn't make any sense. Essentially, they're all chosen to appeal to particular discrete Democratic Party constituency groups. You know, we have the Italian holiday for Columbus, which is no longer much celebrated. We have the Union holiday, which is Labor Day. We have the Black holiday, which is Martin Luther King Day. So if you kind of go through the list, you see that they don't really strike a nonpartisan pose or actually, I think, make much sense. I mean, why should we have a union day when effectively, other than government employees, nobody's in a union anymore? And why should we have Columbus Day and so on? So I thought that that ought to be changed. And I also told him I thought there was no reason why the coinage should be entirely a matter of Democratic Party pieties. We have not only Andrew Jackson, who's a lamentable fellow, we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes, but we also have Franklin Roosevelt on the dime. We have John Kennedy on the half dollar. We have basically a bunch of people who are all somehow people who stand for the late 20th century Democratic Party scheme of relaying American history to people. And I thought that there should be some substitutions. Why not people that conservatives or constitutionalists think are admirable on the coins? For example, why not Reagan? Why not Coolidge? Why, in other words, why leave this question unaddressed? And unfortunately, I'm sure, not having ever heard of it, Speaker Gingrich didn't act on my suggestion.
Oh, so, I don't believe that.
So the point is, though, that in general, what happens in American government is that when Republicans have control, they don't do anything. And then when Democrats get control, they make substantial changes like this. I mean, there's obviously a didactic purpose involved in saying, well, we want to have a woman on the money, and then floating a list that's made up entirely of left-wingers, and then choosing one of them, or at least unknowingly choosing one who's kind of a mixed bag on that score. But the symbolism, of course, is supposed to be that we want a woman, and preferably a black one, happily also one who was anti-Southern. That's a nice thing, too. So in any event, when it comes to this particular person they've chosen to replace Jackson with, it seems to me that this is just a screaming example of the way affirmative action works. And if somebody were to say to any American historian, how about if you compose a list of the 100, 200, 400, 1,000 most important Americans who are not currently on the currency, I don't think that Harriet Tubman would make the list. And I don't think that's really a controversial assertion. So essentially, this is yet another example of kind of grading on a curve depending on what somebody's genitalia or pigmentation might be.
You know, it's interesting, and I know that you've traveled abroad a bit, but if you go to Great Britain, the current queen is on much of the British currency.
Well, of course, that's the way currency has always been. I think the oldest known coins are over 3,000 years old, and they had kings' faces on them. And essentially, through history, either the local gods or the king or both could be found on most currencies. This is why Washington disapproved the idea of putting his face on the currency. And by now, the currency has come to be a kind of, as I said before, a kind of reflection of the way that people at the head of the Democratic Party or liberal-dominated academia want you to think about American history. I think it's unfortunate, and something ought to be done about it. You know, what is it exactly that Republicans who control all the committees in Congress do? How is it that we go years and years and years with them controlling the House and the Senate committees with oversight of the Treasury, and nobody ever says, well, let's think about the coinage. Why is Jackson still on it? Or how did John Kennedy end up on the 50-cent piece when he didn't really do anything? You know, his only significance is people were sad when he was killed.
Did you see 60 Minutes Sunday night? Because if you did or heard about it, well, then you know what the Republicans are doing in Congress. They're raising money most of the time. They're on the working the phones like they work for, like they're working for the Shopping Channel or something. Like they're working for QVC.
Yeah, but the Democrats are doing that too.
That's
right. How come they're always? Well, we've talked about this before. I think Republicans in Congress really are pitiful. So.
Well, you'll get no
another illustration of that fact.
It is another illustration of it. Now, let me ask you. As you point out, the historical precedent or the tradition, as I said, that when I went to Great Britain, I was surprised to find you wouldn't have a use for a pound here, but all the dollars that I traded in for pounds all had Queen Elizabeth on them. I didn't see any Churchill coins. I didn't see any coins with the English equivalent of Washington or James Madison or someone to that effect would have been from that era would maybe have been Edmund Burke or maybe Lord North or someone who was in one of those problems, but nothing of the sort. And as you pointed out, the oldest coins that you could find on Earth are usually minted with the visage of whoever it was that was the Caesar of Rome, whoever it was that was the current occupant. I seem to or the current monarch. I seem to recall when Zimbabwe's currency, when it took like $1 trillion to buy a loaf of bread, that the cat that was on the Zimbabwe $1 trillion bill was the current corrupt president. So. If the tradition was that, well, we're going to take it out of your hands, and basically, whoever it is that is elected president becomes the you change the currency out, and you put them on the bill. Well, that would be one way to do it. That would remove it, and then you wouldn't have to remove it from the grips of Congress, and you wouldn't have to wait for the Republicans to do it. Problem with that is, as you know. President may only last 4 years. Of course, they could die in office. Like, who died that made Coolidge president?
Harding.
Harding, right. Warren Harding. I've had having a brain spasm. So that doesn't seem to me like a system that would be very effective. What about you?
Well, there needs to be consideration of this question, and then Congress should name particular people it wants to see, you know? And again, I don't know why the Treasury Secretary is the guy who ends up making this decision. So I would say that they ought to nominate maybe Harding, actually, but certainly Coolidge and Reagan. And, I can think of other presidents in the past whose conservative bona fides are outstanding. And if they were analogous to the chief Democratic symbols, they would already be on the coins. You know, we have Truman, we have Kennedy, we have Franklin Roosevelt, we have Lincoln, we have basically the whole set of the left wing's idea of who the best presidents were. And why is that? Why is the makeup of the currency so partisan? You know, they're getting the Democrats have decided to get rid of Andrew Jackson, but the reason Andrew Jackson was on there was because he was the first Democratic president. So he was a kind of symbol. Actually, there's a famous book published in the 1940s by a very partisan historian named Arthur Schlesinger Jr. called The Age of Jackson. And from
you're with him.
Yeah. And from that book, it became a kind of standard interpretation that, well, Jackson was a kind of precursor of Franklin Roosevelt. I mean, this is actually a cockeyed theory, but that was the idea. And so this is essentially this understanding is why Andrew Jackson is on the currency. And we don't see, you know, we don't see John Tyler or Jefferson or, you know, somebody else who stands for our principles.
I have a question, though, and perhaps you could lend an answer to this. Jackson may have been the first Democrat president, but if you want to honor Democrats, why not honor the founder of the Democrat Party? That was Martin Van Buren. He was a president, too, wasn't he?
Well, Martin Van Buren, Thomas Ritchie, and John C. Calhoun were the founders of the Democratic Party. And of course, John
we could have a three-headed. Calhoun. We could have a three-headed masthead on the $100
bill. Well, Calhoun is currently in very bad odor with Democrats, basically for the same kinds of reasons as Jackson is. And Thomas Ritchie, well, he was a newspaper editor, not the kind of person they usually want to see on currency. So,
you know, Kevin just used some terminology that I've been reading. I've been reading a lot of 17th and 18th century Catholic works, Lives of Saints, and that's one. That's a word that comes up we don't use in the same manner anymore. And you said that these certain Democrats are not in the own odor. Odor of approval or odor of approbation or whatever the term may be. We don't use the term odor like that anymore. Today, someone, if you say odor, you think bee odor, body odor, and not whether or not someone is honorable or dishonorable. Final question. If we were talking bee odor, Andrew Jackson would have been honorable or dishonorable?
Well, I think we're going to discuss this in our next segment. But
yes, we are.
Jackson was not the kind of guy you would want your son to grow up to be. Let's put it that way.
Let's leave that as a nice tease and move on to the next segment here. So, folks, hold your hats. We're coming right back with segment two here of Constitution Hour with Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman on the subject of the currency and who should be on it and what does the Constitution have to say about it. Remember, if you miss any of these episodes of the Constitution Hour, you can download all of them in the Founders Past member area at VeritasRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back with more of the Constitution Hour here on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network, radio the way it should be.
To Constitution at VeritasRadioNetwork.com.